Well, we left Paul last time in front of Felix, and this week we're going to look at Paul's response as the hired attorney for the council from Jerusalem. Tertullius has made a case against Paul. He made basically a flattering introduction to Felix, who is the governor of that section that has been assigned to him through Rome. And as you recall, Paul has been brought from Jerusalem to Caesarea, and he's on his way to Rome. Paul knows that because Jesus had appeared to him and told him about that. And the commander of the Roman guards there at the Antonia, which is this little fortress that's next to the temple area there, that they're there to make sure there's no problems that arise politically that would cause a problem for Rome. And if you'll recall, the guy finds out in the midst of this chaotic event with Paul, that Paul is not only a Jew, but he's a Roman citizen. Therefore, he has an obligation to be heard. So there's a plot that is against Paul's life that the council comes up with, the Sanhedrin mostly, and the high priest. And as they're going to revisit with Paul at the temple courtyard, because the commander Claudius wants to be there, wants to be present, word gets back that they're going to assassinate Paul on his way there. So Paul finds out, he shares it with his nephew, tells his nephew to go and tell Claudius. His nephew tells Claudius. They move him to Caesarea, which is right on the coastline there at the Mediterranean Sea. And Paul is kept in Herod's praetorium. And that praetorium is beautifully located right there. In fact, the ruins are, some of it is covered by water now because of the sea making its way more inland in erosion. And if you're facing the Mediterranean Sea and you're standing in Herod's praetorium, there's an area right there is where Paul would have given his defense, not only before Felix, but later we're going to see Festus and then King Agrippa. And he's going to spend 5 years there. It's not like they're in a hurry to get him to Rome. And Felix is going to begin the procrastination. In fact, I entitled our lesson today, Paul proclaims to Felix. He's going to give his defense, and then he's going to share the gospel, basically. And then Felix is just going to kind of put it off. So Paul's going to stay there for a couple of years, and then Felix is going to kind of have a change in the guard, and then eventually Paul's going to be there about 5 years before he makes it to Rome. But if you're standing there where Paul is imprisoned, and it's a light imprisonment because he's just guarded and he's free to go anywhere he wants to, not in Caesarea, but basically in the Praetorium. And it's a pretty large place. I'd say it takes up the area of about a football field. You know, it's probably 120 yards by 60 yards, that whole area. And just to the right of it, if you're facing the Mediterranean Sea, just to the right of it is a hippodrome where they had horse races. And there's a little place that you walk out of the praetorium and you stand there and you're right in the turn and you can see the whole hippodrome there. And they got stands on this side, and the stands that were over by the sea have been washed away. And then in the distance is an aqueduct that the Roman Empire had built, and it's actually a double aqueduct because the first one they actually bolted an aqueduct on top of it when the bottom one became, I don't know, maybe clogged up, might be the right term, or washed out. So they built another one right on top of it. It's pretty interesting. Then back behind that area is a, if you're standing at the praetorium, is a theater that Herod had built. And they have concerts there. In fact, when we were there, they had the stage set up for a concert. And I'm going to try to get these slides together by the time we get to King Agrippa and show it to you. But it's a fascinating city. It's a beautiful city, or it was in that day. Now we just have the ruins of it. So Paul's going to stay there for a while. Most people don't realize that. Most people think he went from Jerusalem to Caesarea, was heard, and then immediately went to Rome. But he didn't. So let's pick it up in verse 10, where Paul is going to proclaim his case, actually, after he has been accused of these items that Tertullius had against him. In verse 10 it says, "When the governor," that's Felix, "had nodded for him," that's Paul, "to speak," Paul responds. Notice his response. He says, "Knowing that for many years you have been a judge to this nation." Now, remember, Tertullius gave this flattering introduction to Felix. Paul is going to just give a basic one-liner about him. And it's not anything that's flattery. In fact, he had not really been a great judge of the nation. He has just been kind of occupying a seat. He says, "I cheerfully make my defense." So here's Paul's defense. "Since you can take note of the fact that no more than 12 days ago, I went up to Jerusalem to worship." So here's Paul's defense. "Listen, I haven't been in Jerusalem long enough to create any problems. I've only been there 12 days. And of those 12 days, I've been, you know, basically held prisoner for about half of them." So he's saying, "Listen, I haven't been there long enough to create a disturbance." He says, 12 days ago, I went up to Jerusalem to worship. He's basically saying, "Listen, I'm a Jew. I'm a believer. I went to Jerusalem simply to worship. I hadn't been there in a while. I've been on these mission trips. I went back to worship." Verse 12, "Neither in the temple, nor in the synagogues, nor in the city itself, did they find me carrying on a discussion with anyone or causing a riot." Now, remember, what was Paul doing? They came to him and they said, "Hey, there's some people here that got a case against you. There's some guys that are going through the Nazarite vow. It would be to your benefit to take some money and to pay off their vow." And so Paul does that. Now, Paul came back with a, I won't say a boatload, but that's, he did in those days, he came back with a boatload of money. For who? For the Jews in Jerusalem. From Corinth, Philippi, they all gave money, collections, for him to bring back and to give to the Jews. They gave out of their, basically out of their poverty, not out of their wealth, in order to help the Jews that were being persecuted in Jerusalem. And so Paul takes some of that money. This is my theological speculation. Where did Paul get the money from? I think he took some of that money and he paid the temple for these guys that were going through the Nazarite vow. So, in verse 13, he says, "Listen, I didn't do anything. I didn't cause a riot." Verse 13, nor can they prove to you the charges of which they now accuse me. But this I admit to you, that according to the way, that's Christianity, which they call a sect, I do serve the God of our fathers. In other words, I'm not serving a false God. The God that is recorded in the Old Testament, they would call that the law. That's who I'm serving. They are calling, the Judaizers, they're calling the way, they're calling Christianity a sect. They're saying it is like a subset of Judaism. And remember, back at the Jerusalem Council, they kind of dealt with that, because what the Judaizers wanted to say is, listen, we don't mind if you practice Christianity as long as it comes under Judaism and as long as those Christians become Jews and follow Judaism prior, then they can practice their beliefs as a Christian. And the main thing that they had a problem with is the resurrection and Christ being the Messiah. Other than that, they didn't have a problem. Well, I mean, that's the whole gospel, right? Yeah, that's like saying, you know, I don't have a problem if you come over to my house, you just can't stay. You know? And so, then in verse 14, he says, but this I do admit to you, that according to the way which they call a sect, I do serve the God of our fathers. Nothing wrong with that. Believe in everything that is in accordance with the law and that is written in the prophets. So he's saying, listen, that's all I've done. I having a hope in God, verse 15, which these men cherish themselves, that they shall certainly be a resurrection of both. And we covered this Sunday. Remember, I said everybody's going to be resurrected. Remember that? Paul says that. Listen what he says. That there shall certainly be a resurrection of both the righteous and the wicked. Now, it might have been that these guys didn't believe in a resurrection, because if you believe in a resurrection, what do you have to also believe in if you're not a believer? A judgment. If the wicked are raised, why? For judgment. So, verse 16, as Paul continues to make his case in his argument, he says, in view of this, and here's what I think he's talking about, in view of there being a resurrection. Now, remember, the Pharisees kind of backed out of the situation. Remember, when Paul got in trouble, he kind of got them, the council, fighting with themselves. He took the Sanhedrin and divided up into the Pharisees and Sadducees, and he just kind of threw out the word resurrection. And, yeah, that's all he had to do, you know? So now what he does is he says, with the view that there is a resurrection, I also do my best to maintain a blameless conscience both before God and before men. In other words, Paul says, listen, by the Spirit, I have a clear conscience before God that I'm trying to do what's right. And as much as it's in my way of doing things, as much as it's relied upon me, I try to have a clear conscience with men. I'm not trying to, you know, go behind anybody's back. I'm not trying to have a political battle. I'm not trying to do the politics of the Christian way or anything. I've got a clear conscience. I'm up front with everything that I'm doing. I'm not trying to do anything behind the scenes. Verse 17, he says, now after several years, I came to bring alms, which an offering, to my nation. In other words, he says, I've been gone for several years. I come back, I got all this money that I've collected from all the churches that I've been visiting and ministering to. They're concerned about the poverty of the Jews and the persecution of the Jewish believers here in Jerusalem. and I come back to my nation to present offerings. Verse 18, in which they found me occupied in the temple. In other words, I went into the temple and I paid for these guys that took the Nazirite vow out of good faith. I paid their taxes. I paid their way. I had been purified. I was without any crowd or uproar. But there were some Jews from Asia. These are the guys that came over from Ephesus, from the believers in Ephesians. Remember, Paul didn't go back into Ephesus. He met outside with the elders on his way back to Jerusalem. He was warned, don't go to Jerusalem. There's going to be trouble for you there. So these guys make their way over there. They create a problem. And Paul says, listen, my accusers ought to be here. If they've got an accusation against me, they should be here. That's what he says in verse 19. Who ought to have been present before you and to make accusation if they should have anything against me. In other words, if they got something against me, they should be here. They should be witnesses to this event that's taking place. Or else, let these men themselves tell what misdeed they found when I stood before the council. In other words, what did I do wrong? Then his last part of his defense, he says, other than for this one statement, which I shouted out when standing among them, for the resurrection of the dead, I am on trial before you today. He says, the only thing that I'm guilty of is that I spoke about the resurrection of the dead. And as David said, when he said that, it was on. I think it was David that said that. So that's Paul's defense. Basically, he says, listen, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't create a riot. The council was in there. The only thing that I said is I believe in the resurrection. So Felix is going to first start not dealing with it. I won't say he swept it under the rug, but he just said, you know what? Hopefully, as I allow Paul to walk around the praetorium, lightly guarded, maybe he'll escape. Or maybe somebody will assassinate. Maybe something will happen that I don't have to deal with it. Verse 22, but Felix, having more exact knowledge about the way. Now, there's two schools of thought here. One is Felix is married to a Jewish girl, Drusilla. Now, he actually had three wives. Drusilla was the name of his first wife. And boy, this is really confusing. Guess what the name of his second wife was? Drusilla. The first one was the daughter of Herod Agrippa I. The other one was the granddaughter of Mark Antony and Cleopatra. So she was about 14 years old. She was married, Mark Antony's daughter. His first Drusilla, he decides that he wants the second Drusilla. So he divorces her and then causes the other marriage to get broken up and then marries her. Yes. Yeah. Maybe he should be on trial. And if you want to read about that, Josephus writes and about that. He's a first century historian. So some believe that Felix had a greater knowledge of Christianity, the way, because he was married to a Jewish girl, Drusilla. My thought Well, there's two schools of thought. That's one. The other is that during listening to Paul, he got a better understanding of what the way was about. About the law, the prophets, and the resurrection. That's the view I hold. I don't see his wife having a great understanding of Christianity and teaching it to Felix. I see Felix, after listening to Paul's argument, getting a clearer picture of what Christianity was about, with Christ being the Messiah and the resurrection of the dead. So that's what I take it when it says, having a more excellent knowledge about the way. Well, Agrippa is a little different because Paul says, I know that you know, and he actually says that you believe in the prophets. So here I think Agrippa had some knowledge historically. Here I think Paul has kind of explained what's going on, and he got a clearer picture. When it says excellent knowledge, I translate that. I got a better understanding. I got a clearer picture of what you're talking about. So notice what he says. Putting them off, saying, when Lysias, that's the Claudius, that's the commander comes down, I will decide your case. So I'm going to wait for him to get here. And he didn't say why he's going to wait. So verse 23, then he gave orders to the centurion for him, Paul, to be kept in custody and yet have some freedom. In other words, he's saying, listen, you got some limited liberty here. We're gonna watch you. You can stay in the praetorium, and you can have visitors. You can come and go, but they're going to keep an eye on you. This is the first century, what's that thing called that they put around your ankle bracelet? That, you know, you can't leave, you know? Can't go outside or whatever. I mean, you know, it's got a sensor on it. And not to prevent any of his friends from ministering to him. So he's under house arrest, but it's a huge house. It's a Herod's Praetorium. And by the way, we saw that at the end of chapter 23, verse 35. I will give you a hearing after your accusers arrive, also giving orders for him to be kept in Herod's Praetorium. All right, so he's gonna put it off. Verse 24, Paul's gonna make another proclamation before Felix, and Felix is gonna procrastinate again. By the way, that's a tactic of Satan. Procrastination. There's an old story that goes that Satan's with his demons, and he says to his demons, I want some of you to go down to earth and disturb God's people. And one says, well, I'll go down there and tell them that there's no heaven. And he says, no, that's not going to work. They already believe that there's a heaven. The other one says, well, I'll go down there and tell them that there's no hell. And Satan says, no, that's not going to work. They already believe that there's a hell. The third one says, I'll go down there and tell them they don't need to be in a hurry to make a decision about heaven or hell. And you know, that's where a lot of people are today. You know, they don't see the urgency. But, I mean, just like Lamar and Sheila, you know, coming home from an Easter service, had been to church, gone to visit, on their way home, a mile from the house, boom. But by the grace of God, right there at the house, Christian Light Road or Wagstaff Road, Donnie and Brenda, who knows? You know, we are just 1 second away from eternity all the time. all the time. So I think that's Satan's great tool, is you don't have to be in a hurry. And guess what? Satan's not in a hurry. Erosion in the church and in spiritual life is just a little bit of compromise every day for a long period of time. And that's what happens. So that's just an application here. So Paul's going to make another proclamation, and Felix is going to not be in a hurry. But some days later, Felix arrived with Drusilla. So he leaves, I think. Some people think that Drusilla was with them. They went in on a trip and he came back. I think he leaves and gets Drusilla and brings her back. So either way, whether he left with her and came back or whatever, he comes back from a trip with Drusilla, his wife, who was Jewish, and sent for Paul and heard him speak about faith in Christ Jesus. So Paul shares the gospel with him. That's his second proclamation. His first proclamation was a defense of himself, but he does plant a seed with the resurrection, the prophets. Verse 25, but as he was discussing righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix became frightened. Yeah. Here you are with your 14-year-old second or wife that, you know, there's a resurrection of the wicked. Let's talk about righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come. Felix became frightened and said, go away from the presence. And when I find time, I will summon you. Basically what he's saying, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to be convicted. In fact, I think that word where he became frightened is not more of a fear, but it's more of, I don't want to be confronted with the truth. I don't want to be confronted with what the future holds for me. I want to live my life the way I want to live it, and hedonism. I want to do what I want to do. And I don't want any consequences. But Paul speaks the truth. He speaks about faith in Christ. Felix is convicted, doesn't want to deal with it, and he says, I'll get back with you on my time frame. Verse 26, at the same time, too, he was hoping that money would be given to him by Paul. See, Paul's got all this money he brought to Jerusalem. He's hoping to get a bribe. He's hoping, you know, for Paul to say, hey, you know what? I got some of this money here, and what's it going to take for me to be set free? But what Felix doesn't know that Paul knows is Paul knows he's going to end up in Rome. He knows he's going to end up in Rome because Christ has told him that. Therefore, last part of verse 26, therefore, he also used to send for him quite often and converse with him. Not about the judgment, not about, probably about, how much money do you have? Where is it? Verse 27, but after 2 years had passed, Felix was succeeded by Festus, and wishing to do the Jews a favor, Felix left Paul imprisoned. Basically, he never dealt with it. You know? So, good old Festus inherits the problem. And, you know, I think good style of leadership in any organization, but especially in the church, is for the church leadership to deal with things that need to be dealt with. And when the Lord moves them out of leadership or moves them to another place of leadership, when the new leadership comes in, there's a clean slate. There's nothing that has been swept under the rug. There's nothing that has not been handled properly and dealt with. There's not a bunch of stuff over here that are, for the lack of a better term, skeletons in the closet, or as we pastors like to say, every church you go to, you know there's going to be some landmines. You just don't want to set them off. You want them just to set themselves off. You don't want to walk on them. So I think a good style of leadership says, you know what? You got to do the right things the right way for the right reasons, and you have to deal with whatever you have. Felix didn't deal with it. 2 years. Let it go on for 2 years until he's out. New guy comes in. New guy comes in and says, all right, let's run down what we got. Well, we got this guy named Paul. Well, tell me about Paul. Well, you know, he's been here for 24 months. We had this attorney come down with a council from Jerusalem. They got some accusations about him that he created a riot. I would say, oh, what was ever determined about? Well, nothing. We just been keeping him up, keeping an eye on him, letting him walk around in Herod's praetorium. He's staying in the 5-star hotel. Any questions about what we covered? We're going to see him before the new governor next week. All right? Well, be careful going home.